With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Expanded Perspectives, Classic Rewind. Hey everybody, and welcome to Expanded Perspectives, Classic Rewind, the show where we replay or re-air some of our favorite segments and interviews we did in the past because some things deserve a listen to more than once. I'm your host, Kyle Filson, and on today's show, we're going all the way back to November 25th, 2013, when we spoke with author, researcher, fellow Texan and friend, Lyle Blackburn, about two of his books, The Beast of Boggy Creek, and The Lizard Man of Scrapeoar Swamp. Now, during his research, Lyle has often explored remote areas of the southern U.S. in search of shadowy creatures said to inhabit the dense backwoods and swamplands of those areas, and he's a real hands-on type of guy. When he's not investigating these mysterious legends, he's also a frontman and founder of the rock band Ghoultown. He's written many books and appeared on many television shows, like Monsters and Mysteries in America, Finding Bigfoot, the CBS Morning Show, and he's actually narrated and appeared on some small-town monster documentaries. Without further ado, let's get into our interview. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Seems like since your little foray on television on the Finding Bigfoot show, things have really started hopping for you for your first book.
Yeah, that's been kind of ironic because I just released my Lizard Man book, but, you know, the Finding Bigfoot episode that featured the legend of Boggy Creek, Spout Monster, we filmed it long ago, but that just happened to come out recently when the season four debuted. So being a part of that, and they really, I was real honored that they, respectfully named me as the expert on the subject, and They featured my book cover right there on the show. And, you know, I was a part of the show and brought some witnesses up there for them and, you know, helped them out on the episode. So when that ran, you know, I just got flooded, obviously, with a lot of folks who had remembered the legend of Boggy Creek or some, you know, new folks that are fans of Finding Bigfoot that were just introduced to it. So I got a flood of emails, which was awesome. You know, a lot of orders for books and the whole thing. So right in the middle of Lizard Man, here came some more Boggy Creek. But that's the cool thing about it. It just, you know, it's always going.
Well, it was, I see why they asked you to come do it, because, I mean, you really feel that way to us, and it seems to everybody else, is you are the foremost expert on it now. I mean, that is, that's, it's kind of like you picked up the torch and ran with it after everything kind of got started.
Oh, definitely. I never, it's funny because I never, you know, thought I set out to be the world's leading expert on anything, and then suddenly I realized, you know, I probably do know more about that than anybody. But, you know, I mean, once I had done all the research on the book, which, of course, I've shared with everybody and everybody knows, but since then, I think I'm the go-to guy. So whenever, you know, something occurs in Boggy Creek or when somebody now wants to come forward and tell me about a sighting they had even, you know, 30 or 40 years ago that now they're willing to share and know that I'm going to listen to them and take it seriously and, you know, not make fun. I'm just a neutral party. I want to hear what you have to say. And so that's, I guess, earned me the respect and brought forward so much more information that, I mean, it won't be long before I can write a part two to that book.
That, now, but now you're talking.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be great. And even that, now we're going to get in also, a little bit later, we're going to get into your newest book, The Lizard Man. And I hope you get to do a part two to that one also. The way it keeps popping around, that would be great too. It always seems to me the people I've talked to in the crypto circles, if it wasn't the Patterson-Gimlin film, then it was the movie that got them all interested. The Legend of Boggy Creek seemed to draw a lot of people in that normally wouldn't have been interested in it. And I just got a question. Now, most people, if you don't know, the movie was released in 1972. And you can do a real quick research. Like I said, the best way to do it is if you can go to Law's website, you can buy the movie from, you still got it there, don't you?
Yeah, I started selling it from my Fountain Monster website because people kept asking, and, you know, at my signing, so I ended up finding a way to get some wholesale copies and sell them. So,
I tell everybody, buy the movie, buy Lyle's book. If that doesn't draw you in, then you're dead inside because that is, it's just like, it's like a drug.
That movie terrified me when I was a kid. I saw it at a drive-in theater.
With the big arm that comes in. Well, what I was going to ask was, they were actually reports of sightings that happened way before the big spur in the 70s, correct?
Correct, yeah. There was sightings dating back, by my research, all the way to around 1908 in that very area of Falk, Arkansas, which is southwest Arkansas. And, but you know, it really got on the map in the early 1970s when a family moved to town, and it is the climax scene of the movie where the creature kind of stalks on the porch night after night, and they end up confronting it. It sticks its hand through the window. They end up shooting at it, and one of the guys tangles with this creature and ends up in the hospital, and that got in the newspaper. And then a sighting about 3 weeks later by a respectable couple from Texarkana, you know, put it back in the paper, and there was just several other sightings. So once that all started, a lot of the old-timers were like, hey, wait, this isn't the first time we've had sightings of a creature like this. Don't y'all remember back in the 60s, there was a whole rash of sightings about 5 miles down in a little community called Jonesville, which is even closer to these Sulphur River bottoms and the place where the creature is said to dwell. And then even further back than that, there was sightings in the 50s and 40s. And so, you know, it was those newspaper reports that sort of brought it to the forefront of everybody's mind and sort of made it a sensational subject. But, yeah, the sightings of this creature, you know, go back a long way.
Well, and what you and I was discussing last night was a lot of people aren't familiar with just how thick a lot of Texas is, especially when you get around in East Texas and then down through all the big piney woods and all and stuff. I mean, there really is. It almost seems like it would be like the Pacific Northwest or even up in Alaska and areas where they actually see these creatures in the heavy woods. We've actually got a lot of the heavy woods out there, especially along the Arkansas-Texas border.
Oh, yeah. In the region which, you know, the locals refer to as the Arklatex, which would be Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, where all those states converge. I mean, it is just thick, wooded areas, complete with, you know, swamps, uninhabitable, remote areas. There's lots of waterways. The Red River Valley comes through there, and all these waterways that you have in southern Arkansas and east Texas, where a lot of sightings occur, a lot of Bigfoot sightings occur, those are all part of this, you know, watershed that all moves down towards the Mississippi. So it's kind of the perfect place that, you know, a creature like this could potentially exist, you know, relatively unknown. And it's not what people think when they start thinking about, you know, Texas or the South. You know, a lot of times you're thinking way down here, oh, it's got to be just, it starts to turn into something out of a John Wayne movie or something, you know, the sort of pseudo desert. But
yeah,
man, that's not the case. And I kind of cover, you know, try to give everybody a real picture of that in the book by describing that whole Arklatex area, you know, just to kind of build the case that, hey, there might be something to this.
Yeah, people can go in there and Google map it if they want to and get an aerial view of just how thick it looks from above. You can actually see what it would look like. I was on your website earlier, and I didn't realize there's even sightings as recent as 2012 that people are reporting seeing things still there.
Yeah. But my book, I left off in 2010. That was the last sighting before it went to press. And I've had several very excellent sightings come to my attention that I've investigated since then. There was a good one in 2011. A girl down there saw a 7-foot-tall hairy creature run across the road, which was actually very near Boggy Creek. And I investigated that one. And that one was actually dramatized on the show Monsters and Mysteries in America that did a segment on the Fountain Monster. But, yeah. 2012, there was a sighting, and there's been several actually this year that's come to my attention. So,
can you share one of those?
Can
you recall one? Because
I can recall one of them. The witness has seen it on two occasions. But if I say the occupation of this person, then I will possibly divulge their identity. I will say that
it's credible.
It's credible because this person is related to a good friend of mine that lives there, and so it's one of those that I'm still in the process of following up on. And some of the reports I've gotten lately have been older ones. I mean, there was some even from the 70s and some dating back to the 80s and 90s, but some of those have been like very recent, and ones that I believe, you know, are credible as far as I can tell.
Well, I know you probably get tired of explaining this one, but it's the one that everybody's fascinated with. We just discussed it with the clip from the arm coming through the window or through the door and them shooting at it and all that. Can you give the real story of what actually happened? Because I'm sure there was probably a little bit of creative license taken with that part of the story.
Yeah, that one is sort of the classic because it ended up in the newspaper. The headline was something like "Falk Family Attacked by Monster," and you know that of course grabbed everybody's attention and kind of put this thing to the forefront of the region and the newspapers at the time. That sighting was based on an incident that occurred to two families that had moved to town, one of them by the name of Ford and the other by the name of Taylor. And they were coming to Falk for work, and they rented a house in the area, and the men were working at night, which left their wives at home. And over the course of several evenings, the wives could hear something walking around on the porch. They got some glimpses of it. They thought that you know, this thing possibly stood upright. And indeed, the hand did come through the window.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, this was, you know, they didn't have any air conditioning unit on this house or anything like this. And it was in May 1971 that this occurred. To their belief, and they don't really show this in the movie, but they had a little dog. And they think that the dog was what was, you know, attracting the attention of this creature. And as they would go from one room to the other, that would, wherever the dog was, this thing kind of followed them. But eventually it stuck its hand through the window, and they really, I mean, you know, they're kind of in hysterics, obviously. So from what they could tell, you know, they said it could have been a paw, it could have been a hand, but it was covered in dark black hair. And, you know, so when the guys got home, they're just like, we've had enough of this, you know, do something about it. So they, you know, they did what any other good Southerner would do. They went down and borrowed the shotgun from the landlord. And it kind of culminated on a Saturday night in which Don Turner, I think I said the family of Taylor earlier. I screw this up every time because the movie calls him Taylor and their actual name is Turner. But anyway, the older Ford brother, Charles Turner, and Bobby Ford, which was the younger brother, all, you know, took out of the house after this creature when it came rummaging around the house. And they ended up taking 7 shots at it with a shotgun. It moved back to the edge of the wood line, and, you know, everything kind of went quiet. So they decided, well, I'm not sure if we hit it. So they took a light, went down, started looking around to see if they could see any blood or any other evidence of having hit the creature. And in the process, you know, they're looking around, and Bobby Ford, the younger brother's starting to get really spooked. I mean, he's thinking, wait a minute, what the hell are we doing? I mean, even if we hit that thing and wounded it, it could be really pissed off, and it's about to tear us out of that, out of the trees and kill us. So he says, I'm done. Here's the light. I'm headed back up toward the house. Exactly. And so as he heads up back towards the house, something comes around the corner from the side and basically attacks him, and he wrestles with this thing, ends up getting free. And he nearly, well, he basically stuck his hand through the front door. Now, in the movie, they show him busting through the front door. I mean, that's a memorable scene, and it totally works. But what really happened was he stuck his hand through the door. He cut himself. Now he's just all messed up. Whatever it was, ran off. And they ended up having to take Bobby to the Texarkana Hospital, where he was treated for minor injuries and shock. And, you know, the guy was totally convinced he had just, you know, encountered a monster and was lucky to be alive. So they bring him in there, and the doctors are just like, oh, man, this is nuts, you know. And they're the ones that called the press and said, hey, you know, we got a guy down here says he's been attacked by a 7-foot hairy monster down in Falk. You guys should go check it out. So that's how it all got started, got in the paper, and that ends up being the climax scene in the movie. But, I mean, you know, what you see in the movie, it's well-paced, and everything, you know, is made well for a movie to be dramatic. But, I mean, essentially, that's what happened.
I feel bad for the guy that was trying to bail out and ended up getting the bad end.
Yeah, there's always safety in numbers. Don't try to go off by yourself. You should know that from every horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, it was 71. If nowadays we've seen enough horror movies, we know that. You know, that's like second nature. But see, he wasn't, you know, they probably didn't, they may not have had TV. So
he wasn't privy to that information.
That's right. Now, Lyle, let me ask you, of all the sightings in that area, are they all, do you think, the same creature? I mean, are all the sightings around 7 foot tall black, or do they see different size ones, different color ones? Like, so maybe there's more than one, or is it, do you think it's just one individual monster that's in that area?
Well, I mean, for me, I always say logically it would have, you know, for something like that to exist, you know, unless it's just some oddball case of a feral human or some really, really strange thing like that. I mean, if it's some sort of unknown primate or anything, there would have to be a family of these things, a population of them, you know,
okay,
for it to exist. And But yes, there is descriptions of different hair color. I mean, some people have seen something that has dark black hair. Some described a reddish or brownish creature. So they, you know, they vary in size. I mean, they vary in color and in size. There was some sightings which seemed like it could have been a juvenile creature. So I think there's, you know, there would have to be more than one.
Okay. What do you think the general consensus is of the people or other cryptozoologists? Do they think this is the traditional Sasquatch, or they think it's more like the skunk ape, or do they think it's a devolved human? Or a Neanderthal or something like that? I mean, what is your opinion on the consensus of what most people think it is?
Well, most people, I mean, a lot of the thought on this, even up until recently, was that, you know, the Southern Bigfoot, so to speak, is something quite different. It's often believed that they have three toes and, you know, would be lumped more in that skunk ape category or species, if you will, and you know, something a little bit more separate from Bigfoot. But to me, if you look at the reports, you know, and kind of take out the sensational details and the attacks and this and that, and just look at the descriptions of the creature, I mean, it's pretty similar to other Bigfoot sightings, you know, and it's, you know, it has a regional flavor, you know, that it seems to be more aggressive, lean, mean, you know, and all that. But I think, you know, it's come around now to where people believe that these are all at least related species to one another. I mean, it would be impossible to have that many different or really different creatures running around. I think they would have all had to been related at one time, and then maybe they have evolved a little bit depending on the environment.
Lloyd Pies, I think, has a theory like that they're almost different based on the regions that they're located, which would make sense.
Yeah, so, you know, they're kind of related, but you know, just like, you know, we have different accents and dialects and different people's skin color changes depending on, you know, you live in a sunnier area or a winter area, there's things like that, so there's natural things like that, but we're all, you know, homo sapiens, you know, we're still related in some way. So the differences in some of these things could probably be attributed to the environment, just where you live. Do you live in a, you know, a humid swamp? Yeah, hell yeah, you're going to be pissed off, you know, you know, as opposed to this nice, well-fed Bigfoot that lives in Pacific Northwest in the nice mountainous area. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's all theories on the table, but that's kind of the way I think about it.
When you got up there at Lyle and started really doing some research and digging, were they really receptive to you? Because it seems like you were like the first one since this time to really dedicate a lot of time to it. I mean, were they open whenever you started like going and meeting with people, and having interviews with them? Were they open to the idea of it again, to really opening up to you and telling you other things that maybe they didn't want to tell, you know, the movies and things like that? And did you get a lot of help, or was it kind of, were you really more on your own whenever you got up there?
Well, I kind of had to earn the respect from some of the townsfolk. I mean, because over the years, you know, they've been subject to ridicule. You've had a lot of, you know, even though, well, including the movie. I mean, the movie made, you know, and some people felt that made, you know, Arkansas folks look kind of backwoods and portrayed Falk as being this, you know, town. I mean, it is out in the you know, rural area, but these are just honest, hardworking people, great people. And so, you know, they've, just the fact that they're associated with a monster, they're a little leery about somebody coming in there, start asking questions, you know, is this going to be on TV, or, you know, what's your book going to say? So when I first went there, you know, I started slow, and I met some people in town that had a lot of knowledge of everything that had gone on. And I met a guy who is a curator of a little museum in there, the Miller Historical Society Museum. And I think as I, you know, when I first show up, they're just like, oh, yeah, this guy's writing a book or whatever, you know. But I kept coming back, and I kept asking more questions, and I kept, you know, looking into, Yeah, I wanted to know about the history of the town. I wanted to know about the people. I wanted to know about the countryside. And, you know, I mean, I'm not from that far away. I'm 3 hours away. I'm in Texas. But, you know, I mean, I could identify with this location. And so I think once they realized that I'm trying to write a serious book and things like that, more people started coming forward. And the guy at the museum would call some people and say, "Hey, man, Lyle's in town. You really got to come down here and tell him your story, because this guy is going to listen to you, and he is going to, you know, be respectful of your story." And once people got the word that that's the case, I started getting more and more input from everybody in the town. And it's still like that today. I mean, now, of course, once the book came out, they saw that I treated the subject seriously, and it's sort of a historical account. It's a history book in some ways. Now, you know, I know that's my problem. Most people, you know, sort of the honorary citizen of the town.
Lizard Man of Bishopville in the Skateboard Swamp.
And how did you get onto that subject, too? I want to hear about that.
Well, yeah, that it's certainly one that doesn't have a at least a cult classic movie associated with it. So it's something that's, you know, fairly well known among cryptozoology circles and people that read, you know, sort of these strange but true monster books. But outside of that, you know, general population, it probably doesn't know what the Lizard Man is. So, you know, what it is was a creature seen in and around Bishopville, South Carolina, and specifically in a place called Skateboard Swamp. And it's not unlike the area of Boggy Creek and where the Fout Monster was sighted. And in this particular case, people were reporting seeing a large, maybe 7 foot tall, humanoid type creature. It walked on two legs. It was often described as being greenish, but sometimes brown. It was sometimes described in reptilian terms. Maybe its skin was scaly. It was said to have 3 fingers and 3 toes, but some of the witnesses said they believed it had hair. So basically, once these stories got in the paper, similar situation, the locals had already dubbed this thing the Lizard Man. And so, in some respects, just the name Lizard Man kind of makes your imagination run down these sort of walking dinosaur type profiles for the thing. But it was just a strange creature that was given this name, and it was just a fascinating story, the way this all played out and the reports of the Lizard Man worked into the media and the way the sheriff's office down there had investigated it. But the way I got onto the story, I was kind of looking for topics to write about after I'd done the Beast of Boggy Creek book, which was no easy task because the book had such a great reception. I mean, I was blown away about the reception of the book. I mean, so I'm thinking, man, what am I going to do to top that? You know, I mean,
Coming out with a second album. What am I going to do?
Yeah, that's it. You know, I mean, I don't want to be a one hit wonder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I need to get out there and do some field research. So I did what I call the swamp tour. All through the Southeast, I went around to different states and visited swamps that had reports of strange creatures. Honey Island Swamp in Louisiana. I went to Okefenokee Swamp in Georgia and places like that. And one of the places I went to is Skateboard Swamp in Bishopville. And in the process of doing that, I was able to stay there for a while and visit with a retired sheriff named Liston Truesdale, who had investigated all these lizard man sightings. I mean, he was there when all this started taking place, which started in 1988, basically. And I was given access to his personal files. I mean, he retained all the newspaper articles, and of course, he knew everything about everybody that ever sighted this creature. And they also had a lot of police documents. I mean, whereas in a lot of these cases, you know, you don't have much like that to work with. But these guys took it seriously. And I had handwritten witness affidavits and all kinds of stuff. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, I've heard of the Bishopville Lizard Man. And I knew about a couple of the major sightings. But I didn't realize this, that there was so much to this story. And so as soon as I kind of realized all that, I thought, you know, this is what's speaking to me. I think this is a fascinating story that has a lot of similarities to the small town of Falk and that whole thing. And I thought this will make a perfect book, you know, and so that's where it came from.
Now, the Boggy Creek stuff was in the early 70s. You know, that's when the film was based. Of course, there were sightings much earlier. Oh, about what time frame were these sightings of this lizard man? When did that start?
It all started in 1988.
Okay.
And the first, basically, the first thing that happened in this case happened on July the 14th, 1988, in which a couple of people called and reported some strange damage, almost like vandalism, to their car. But it wasn't vandalism, they didn't feel, because it looked like an animal had basically attacked or mauled the car. So they called the sheriff's office and said, we don't know what to make of this. Can you come, you know, come out here and look at our car? So Sheriff Truesdale sent a couple of deputies down there, and they just so happened to live near Skateboard Swamp, you know, and obviously a lot of animals live in that area. The deputies get down there, and it does appear that some sort of animal had done some damage to the car, and they found hair and some smaller footprints on the car, and they saw some larger footprints that walked out back into the swamp. And so they didn't know what to make of it. They called Sheriff Truesdale and said, hey, you know, you got to get down here. We don't know what to make of this. It looks like an animal ate up this car. So he's like, okay, whatever. So he goes down there. In the process of investigating this, some of the locals came up and said, well, maybe it was the lizard man. Sheriff Truesdale's like, the lizard man? What? They said, don't you know, there's several people down here has been seeing this large, it's a green or a brown creature of some sort that's been lurking around the swamp. And so the sheriff's like, no, I haven't heard of this. So,
yeah.
You know, can I get in touch with some of these witnesses? You know, he was intrigued just if, you know, I mean, he thought maybe this is just some big hoax. You know, he's starting to think, you know, what's up here? So he ends up, he just kind of puts out the APB and says, anybody that's had a sighting this, you come talk to me. Nobody's in trouble. Nobody's going to jail. I just want to get to the bottom of what's going on. And they left it at that. Well, the incident involving the car got printed in the newspaper. And then about 2 days later, after that had run, a father brings his son in there. And this was his son was a 17-year-old. High school student by the name of Christopher Davis, and his father said, you know, Sheriff Truesdale, my son's got a story that I think you really need to hear. It may involve this creature that people are talking about, this lizard man or whatever it is. And so this young man, Christopher Davis, tells the sheriff that he had been basically attacked by this thing when he had a flat tire one night going through Skateboard Swamp. And he described it as, in his term, he basically said it was some kind of red-eyed devil, but it was basically a a creature that fit this description of what everybody else was saying, a 7-foot-tall greenish creature. It came running at him, and he barely escaped by jumping in his car and driving away. Now, the sheriff's at this point sort of like, okay, we've got some, there's some really strange stuff going on, but no matter how hard it was to accept this young man's story, he felt that he was telling the truth. Obviously, something happened to this kid, and that's what got the whole thing rolling in 1988. And once that got in the paper, just kind of like the Falk thing, you know, monster attacks a kid, and then some guys come forward and say, well, this isn't the first time it's been seen. A couple of years ago, there was some sightings, and then there was sightings following that. So it played out very similar to the Falk monster case.
Well, I had doing some of the reading and all this and research after talking to you and before talking to you even about the book, I had read that Christopher actually ended up taking 2 lie detector tests that his insurance company wanted him to take before they would even consider paying for the damage done to his car. And he passed them both with flying colors.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's sort of correct. He did took at least 1 lie detector test. It wasn't from the insurance company. The insurance company, I don't even know if he tried to file a claim attacked by a lizard man.
Yeah, it peeled off the mold on my
hands. I realize when they attack on the car, like when, you know, they tell you not to leave like a sandwich or any food in your car when you go to Yellowstone in the summertime.
Like a bear?
Right, because the bears will just bust through there trying to get to it.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, he did have food in his car at the time.
See? Oh, great. So don't drive around with a sandwich in your car.
Well, specifically, a filet-o-fish sandwich from McDonald's.
Oh, great.
That's what he had because he actually worked at McDonald's. So when he was driving home that night, he worked the late shift, and he was coming through, and he had to go through that remote area of Skateboard Swamp, which is still fairly remote, but way back then it was really remote. And yeah, he had a pile of
wow. So lizard man likes McDonald's and Sasquatch likes beef jerky.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Exactly. So, you know, if you want to capture one, there's what you bait with.
Well, it sounds like the sheriff, what we were talking about earlier about the Falk monster, was it sounds like he had a bunch of information that was a little bit easier for you to get your hands on than going and sitting in the libraries and going through the old newspaper clippings and all that for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, I mean, I looked out there because...
Got spoiled.
Yeah, when I went to his house, he pulls out this, like, cedar chest thing that I opened up, and it was just, you know, a 2-foot pile of papers stacked that high of just every clipping and everything related, photos, just the whole deal. And... you know, he's gracious enough to share all that information with me. And he'd always kind of had the desire to write a book about this, but he just, you know, I mean, first he's busy being a sheriff, and then, you know, he's not a writer by trade. And I think he, you know, he really felt that it was such an interesting story that it was great that somebody was coming to write a book about it.
Now, Christopher Davis wasn't the only vehicle attacked. There's been that other one before his even. I mean, there's been several attacked even up recently too, hasn't there? That they've come out and found scratches. And because I had seen something, I'm trying to believe it was on YouTube, a video showing some clips talking about the lizard man. And there was a woman describing what happened to her minivan. And they actually had video footage of it. And it looked like all hell broke loose on the hood and around the fender wells and the scratching and... It really looked like it was almost chewed on around where the hood closes. So, I mean, there's been multiple vehicles actually attacked. And the first thing I thought of was she was speaking about her cats. She had a lot of cats on her front porch. It was cold, and she had her blankets out for them. And when she went out to see them the next morning and, I guess, put food out, the blankets were gone. She couldn't find any of her cats. Her husband was going to run to the hardware store, she said, and he went outside and he came to get her, said, honey, put your coat on and come out here and look at this. And the minivan was all attacked. And the first thing I thought of is, like they always tell you, if you have a warm vehicle, always check it before you start it in the mornings and things in the cold weather, because cats will normally lots of times get up in the fender wells or even get up inside the area where the motor itself is to try to stay warm on the motor itself. And it made me think maybe they were some up in there maybe hiding whenever this creature come along trying to get in there to a cat sandwich from wherever that would come from.
Yeah, not filet of fish this time, but not a cat sandwich. Filet of cat. Filet of cat.
Exactly.
No, you're dead on with what I think might have happened there, because, but it is a weird thing that in this same area, you know, the very thing that set off this case in 1988, the same kind of car damage occurred in 2008 and in 2011. And the incident you're talking about would be the 2008 one where Bob and Dixie Rawson had reported the car damage. And I think that's the one where she had all those cats and so forth out there. Now, it does make sense if you know, a cat was up there and some, you know, an animal is trying to get to them, a predator of some sort. But the weird part about it is how ate up the car is. I mean, it's like whatever it was trying. Yeah, I mean, it's like. Typically, a wild animal will not risk damaging their teeth or claws or anything else. I mean, they depend on this to live, and to be so insane to try to eat up a car. I mean, the metal was literally just gnawed and bitten. And, you know, it just, no matter what theories came forth, it just was a weird, weird thing, and especially that it keeps happening in the same area. So while there's no direct evidence to suggest that the lizard man or whatever this creature was that people might have been seeing damaged these cars, it just added to the whole weirdness of what is going on down there in Bishopville, South Carolina.
You're right. The way the car looked like it was attacked was almost like it was raging. Like once it couldn't get the pickle jar open is when it really lost its mind and really had at the hood of that car.
Yeah.
I heard you say that, you know, they say that it's covered in green scales and, or that they believe it is, but have any of them ever seen it with hair? I mean, do they know for a fact it's a lizard, or is it a misidentification of what maybe somebody might believe it's a Bigfoot or it's a Sasquatch?
Oh, well, yeah, if you start looking closely at the descriptions, you start to see that they differ almost radically between some of the sightings. While some of the early ones describe what might have been some kind of scaly skin. It was a scaly humanoid or something like that. Some of the later sightings definitely sounded more in the realms of a Bigfoot. So this, in trying to sort out what the heck it could be, it opens up a lot of questions. You know, were the early sightings, maybe it was a Bigfoot covered in mud or algae, or it was wet from the swamp and, you know, was glistening and sort of gave off this more reptilian look, or maybe there was multiple creatures seen down there. The possibility of some sort of hybrid human reptilian is so implausible. I mean, the biology just doesn't add up for that. So it sounds kind of crazy that you might start, you know, explaining one cryptid using another, but, you know, that is something that certainly comes into play here. But there's a lot of other theories that circulate around involving these so-called reptilian humanoids that, I mean, it's fascinating to kind of see what people have come up with. And I tried to just focus on this case and say, you know, what did people see something here? What was it? Here's how it played out, without trying to get, you know, too far down into other paths of being, you know, extraterrestrials and all this. But I certainly acknowledge that these are potential, explanations and things that, you know, people have offered up over the years. So it's kind of a tough case because of that. You can't just strictly say, you know, I saw some big, hairy, man-like creature. Was it a Bigfoot or was it not? In this case, you're like, I saw a big reptilian-looking humanoid, and that opens up about 50 questions, you know. So I had a lot of trouble, you know, trying to make that layout in the book so that it didn't get too confusing, but I certainly wanted to cover all the bases. But nobody's ever really done this before. I've seen other books written on reptilian humanoids and a lot of specifics to the Bishop, where they were basing hypothesis on evidence that was either hoaxed or wrong or misconstrued, it's not done well. And that would, I thought it needed a proper treatment here, and I needed to present all the information so that now we can really kind of make a little better educated guess about the whole thing.
It's funny. Yeah, you, that you bring up, it's funny, is the fact that the Bigfoot guys have a hard time believing that it could be a reptilian. You know, like, come on now, I can buy a Bigfoot, but I'm not buying a reptilian now. Come on.
Yeah, to your average, you know, person you're talking to, you know, at the gas station or the mall, they're just going, what? You know, that all sounds crazy. So
this guy's lost his mind.
You start splitting hairs or, you know, literally splitting Bigfoot hairs here. But, you know, to me, overall, you know, the one reason that I was attracted to this story just is because it's a cool story and it involves some sightings of an unknown monstrous creature. And no matter what that really turns out to be, that's the point. You know, in some cases, just like the Boggy Creek case, where it's just like, man, some scary stuff going on. These sightings are spooky, and you know, it makes an interesting story. And I try to, you know, write an engaging book. But at the same time, I am offering data and information about cryptids. You know.
Yeah, for sure. Didn't know when you was talking about a hoaxing and things. Didn't one of those actually happen to Josh Gates and his television series involving this whole deal?
Well, yeah,
they ever proved that it was ever a hoax? I know that they had found footprints, but they actually wanted to try to play it off.
Well, yeah, that these footprints that were found back in 1988, he came across those when he was out there with his TV crew filming the Destination Truth episode on the Lizard Man. And I actually spoke to Josh about this once when we were both appearing at a Bigfoot conference, but those tracks, you know, I mean, I hate to give away too much on the book. It's kind of a spoiler.
Don't get into it. But if it's a good story in there, then yeah, let's make sure I keep it. Yeah.
Hey, Lyle, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would just say, but basically there was, you know, he, like myself, is just trying to get to the bottom of this story. So we've brought out some stuff, and he did it before I did, but I brought it out in my book, What's What About This Case. And people, I don't think, have ever had all this information. And certainly when you read my book, you now have it all. It's never been out there. I've seen, you know, here's a picture of this track. Here's a picture of this or that. Or here's what some witness says. I see wrong stuff all over the internet about this. You know, so this is the first time you can find out.
You're going to mess around and be the foremost guy on this now.
Yeah, well, I filmed a TV show on it, so I guess that you know, makes me the expert.
Yeah, well, what I was going to ask is, are all these sightings, I mean, or not all of them, of course, but are most of the sightings when people are driving through the area and seeing, you know, from the road, are they seen by hikers, hunters, you know, people fishing, camping, or does it always seem like they're just seeing when they're crossing the road or attacking people's cars at their residences in that area?
Yeah, do they hate Chryslers or Fords? Because it sounds like I had read they had attacked a Ford Mustang. Like, it hates Ford products.
No, it's actually Dodge, Caravan, minivans.
Because it doesn't hate those.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like you can't blame the thing for attacking them.
So soccer moms, beware.
No, for real, the 2008 and 2011 car damages were both on a Dodge minivan, so
wow.
Which is bizarre that it would be the same car. But anyway, you know, there's not a long list of sightings of this creature, but in the cases where it was sighting, there's an assortment. Christopher Davis said it, you know, ran at him as he was changing a flat. Another local saw it walking around through the woods near a Skateboard Swamp Bridge. You had an Air Force colonel see it run across the road in front of him. And this is an Air Force colonel. I mean, this isn't just anybody. But, you know, it was like one of those typical, it ran across the road in his headlights, and it was very brief. There was also another, some teenagers that saw it run across the road. you had a crop duster see it from his plane.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
An aerial sighting. This is like, you know, you don't often get an aerial sighting of a cryptid, so.
That's the best way to view it.
Yeah, he was the safest.
Exactly.
So, so basically, it was a whole wide range of situations in which people believe they saw this creature. Kind of like you have in any other case, I guess.
So I'm assuming that you actually went and run around in the swamps up there with it too, because I know you did it at Falk. So I'm assuming you ran around up there in Bishopville having some fun.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was one of the things I was doing on that swamp tour when I was out there is, you know, going into the area and just having a look at the lay of the land, so to speak, or the flow of the water or lack thereof. That's a blackwater swamp, Scapor is, but it does have a main channel that sort of cuts through there. It almost looks like a glorified creek in some regards, but all of it. The land on either side of the main water channel is very thick and rough terrain, you know. And, I mean, there's even quicksand down there. I've got a great section in my book which talks about Sheriff Truesdale almost dying basically in quicksand in there one time while he was chasing some moonshiners, which is... Any time I can work in some police chase and moonshiner tales into my books, I definitely love that. So
that's literary gold, is what that is.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, it's perfect. So you got, you know, not only got monsters, you got, you know, small town sheriffs, and you got moonshiners.
Moonshiner.
So,
and quicksand.
And quicksand. I mean, I've got it all. I mean. And I did, and even girls. I had a lovely assistant with me, my friend Cindy Lee, who does a lot of, or goes with me into the field a lot. She was with me on that trip, and so we both ventured into the lands around Scapor Swamp. You know, looked around, and you know, I didn't expect I would, you know, here I'm going to see the lizard man or anything, because it's not like it's been a hot spot of sightings lately, but. But I definitely like to, bring that to the reader and the descriptions that I'm offering up about the swamp are coming from me firsthand. And yeah. So, you know, that definitely was the case in this book.
Well, just when I thought it couldn't get any better when I saw your book, The Beast of Boggy Creek, and the cover art and all that, the cover art for the Lizard Man book is badass.
Yeah, that was another thing, you know, because the cover art for Beast of Boggy Creek was so great. I'm thinking, oh man, I gotta bring it home here, because, you know, people are gonna compare.
You know,
where when I wrote the first book, there was nothing to compare to. So now I've sort of set a precedence of quality art, and I think, you know, yeah, that cover is just, it nailed it. It was perfect.
You're going to end up being like Daniel Day-Lewis, the actor. How are you going to keep out doing this? I mean, your next book, the pressure keeps mounting, brother.
I know. I'm going to have to, you know, I don't know. I think what's going to be, I'm going to be more like Chris Angel or something. I'm going to have to put myself into more perilous situations, you know.
Tear hold my beer.
You know, yeah.
I'm going in.
I'm going in. I'm chasing it, you know. And, you know, something like that. You know, my canoe tips over and I wrestle an alligator when I'm trying to figure out.
That'd be badass.
You know, while I'm chasing down the pig man in Okefenokee or something.
Right. Now, where can people find your books, Lyle? I mean, obviously they're on Amazon and stuff. Don't you prefer they go to your actual website?
Well, you can get them signed. You'll sign them, won't you?
That's right. A book is always better when signed by the artist. So
I completely agree.
You know, I do sell them directly from myself, and the best place to find that is my website, Lyle Blackburn, LYLEBlackburn.com. Just Google me. It comes right up. So I have all the links there necessary. And, you know, I do offer the links to whatever flavor you like, because they're available on Amazon in Kindle and Barnes & Noble and the Nook, you know, the digital iTunes, ebooks, so whatever flavor, it's all good, but you can get the signed ones from me if you follow the links on my site.
Yeah, we'll put show notes to your website.
You've also got hardbacks to The Beast of Boggy Creek, don't you?
That's right. It was cool. They didn't originally publish the book in hardback, but Anomalous had decided to release some of their quote-unquote better titles, I guess, in hardback. So mine was one of those, and I was like, oh, man, how cool is this? And, you know, I've been selling a ton of those hardbacks at book signings speaking appearances, because they're just, man, that's something for the library.
If you don't have a hardback signed copy of Lyle's book, you're not a cool guy. I'm just gonna,
he's even got posters available. I want a poster signed.
Yeah. I want the hoodie.
Oh, yeah.
That's hoodies.
The hoodie. Yeah. I'm getting a hoodie. I'm definitely getting a hoodie. The hoodie is badass.
Yeah, I had to start, you know, I do all these appearances and book signings, and people love, you know, they love the cover art. It's like, man, if you had posters, and I'm thinking, okay, well, here's some posters. Yeah. And, you know, I just, hey, you know, it's something that, and it does help pay my expenses if I'm going around, because I love to go everywhere and travel, and I mean, in all honesty, doing a swamp tour is not cheap. I drove all around the country for weeks doing all this, and, you know, so in some ways, the sales of this stuff sort of feed back into me being able to, write these books at the level I'm doing it, and if people want to, you know, put me in jeopardy of wrestling with an alligator, you know, I encourage you to keep buying stuff.
That's right.
I'm going to have to do it.
Yeah, with your recent appearance on Finding Bigfoot, do you have any other upcoming TV appearances or any book signings or conferences you're going to be at you'd like to tell people about?
I did film several new episodes of Monsters and Mysteries in America, which would air in season 2. I'm not sure when that would air. The last season aired last spring, so I'm assuming maybe this spring you'll see me on some of the segments of Monsters and Mysteries in America, which has done some good stuff, because the first season they did a segment on the Falk Monster, and, you know, I was involved in that, so it was great. The event's coming up December 7th. I'm going to be at the Weird West Fest in Giddings, Texas, which should be a unique place. I thought, well, what? Why do y'all want me talking about Bigfoot there? And they're like, oh, man, it's just cool. It's in Texas, and they wanted me, so I'm going to do a presentation on Bigfoot in the Wild West.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are a lot of reports, you know, dating back to 1800s and things, so I was like, oh, that'll be cool. And I don't know, on into next year, I'll be appearing at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference on April 26th, which is, Ohio Bigfoot Conference is one of the top conferences in the U.S. for Bigfoot, so I'm honored that I was chosen as a speaker for that. So that's going to be a great event.
That will be awesome. Yeah, we'll have to get you. You can come on either right before that or right after that, or whatever you want to. We'll have to get you back on.
Yeah, promote your stuff.
Yeah, certainly. I think coming around in the spring of next year, I'll be probably doing a lot of events, and, you know, like I said, the TV shows will be coming out.
So alligator I'll get a lot wrestling.
Alligator wrestling. There'll be tons of stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Well, this has been awesome.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys having me on. I mean, you do live pretty close, so if I got to wrestle alligators, I might take you guys with me.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll get in there and get after it. I'll put Kyle in the water. I'm not a big fan of the water. I'll drive the boat and hold the beer, but I'm going to put Kyle's sorry ass in the water with you.
Oh, I see how it works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll hold the camera. I'm like, look, I got this filmed, guys. This is on now.
Right, right. Well, yeah. somebody's got to hold the camera.
Yeah,
right.
And the beer. I mean, I'm good at that, but I'm not getting in the water, man. I don't mind. I'll help you drag them in the boat, but I don't know if I can get in there. I'm a bit of a coward.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Lyle Blackburn as much as we did. He's a really cool guy, and he has this ability to make friends with almost anyone, which I think gives him an advantage when trying to get locals to come forward and share their stories. You see, that's always a problem when you want to go to some place something went down at, and you go there and you're an outsider. You know, the locals don't always want to come forward and tell their stories to a stranger. They don't trust you. They don't know what you're going to do. They don't want to feel exploited. But Lyle, he's a real smooth talker. So he's always got this way of getting in there and getting the good stories that, you know, other people and other researchers have never gotten. So I really appreciate the books that he's written. They're very interesting, very good reads. If you're interested in cryptozoology, I suggest you go check him out. You can search for his books anywhere. You can go to Amazon. You can go to his website. I'll put links to everything in the show notes as usual. Sorry, I can't talk. But yeah, if you're really interested in what Lyle's doing and would like to hear more, you got to go pick up some of his books. His latest book is called Sinister Swamps. And then, of course, there's The Beast of Boggy Creek, Beyond Boggy Creek, Momo, The Strange Case of the Missouri Monster, and, of course, The Lizard Man, The True Story of the Bishopville Monster. Don't forget, if you have a story you want to share with Cam and I, just email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Please subscribe, rate, and write us a review on whatever podcatcher you're using. Also, please share the show with your friends, colleagues, and your family. You'd be surprised, but word of mouth is still the best way to make a podcast grow. Also, if you want to help us out, please go over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel there. Even if you have no intentions of ever listening or watching us over there, we're trying to grow our channel, and every little bit helps us out way more than you'll ever know. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Till next time, folks, be safe and pay someone a compliment this week. Pay it forward, people. Peace.